Tabitha is a composite. The blockages, the conversations, the doors that closed are real, and they are closing across London now. This is their story. In Ealing Central and Acton, healthcare workers who could staff the wards that desperately need them are blocked from training by artificial budget caps. The training facilities exist, the candidates exist, the vacancies exist, but Treasury spending limits treat public investment as a household expense rather than the deployment of real resources.
I've wanted to be a nurse since I was 8 years old, watching my mum come home from her shifts at Ealing Hospital. She'd tell me about the patients she'd helped that day, and I knew that was the work I wanted to do. When we moved from Southall to Acton when I was 12, nothing changed about that dream. I just had to wait longer to reach it. After finishing my A-levels at Acton High School, I worked in retail for 6 years while caring for my grandmother. It wasn't the plan, but it was what our family needed. When I finally applied for nursing training at 28, I was ready. More than ready. I'd spent 6 years watching people, helping customers, dealing with stress, learning patience. I scored highly on every assessment. Imperial College Healthcare NHS Trust was my first choice in 2018. The interview went perfectly. The assessments went perfectly. Then I got the call. Despite my excellent application, there were no funded training places available that year. Health Education England's budget allocation had been reduced, they explained. It sounded reasonable. Budgets get reduced all the time, don't they? I tried again the following year, applying to both Imperial and Central and North West London NHS Foundation Trust. Same story from both trusts. They wanted to take me, they said, but HEE had capped their training budgets. The administrators were apologetic. There is no funding, one of them told me directly. We'd love to have you, but our hands are tied. In 2020, I applied to West London NHS Trust. By now, I knew what they'd say before they said it. Funding constraints meant no new places. The woman on the phone sounded genuinely sorry. It's not about your application, she assured me. It's just the money isn't there. I contacted Health Education England directly that year. An administrator explained that Treasury spending limits had forced them to reduce nursing training budgets by 15% despite rising vacancy rates. She said it matter-of-factly, as though it made perfect sense. Everyone I spoke to accepted it. I accepted it. The money wasn't there. What could anyone do? I applied to King's College Hospital NHS Foundation Trust in 2021, knowing the likely outcome but refusing to give up. While I waited, I started volunteering at a local vaccination centre. The centre was housed in an old community college building in Acton, and one day I got lost trying to find the supply room. I opened the wrong door and found myself in three fully equipped clinical training rooms. Proper hospital beds, monitoring equipment, simulation mannequins still in their boxes, everything you'd need to train nurses. We were going to run nursing courses here, the centre coordinator told me when I asked. Had it all planned out, but we couldn't get funding approval. The rooms had been sitting empty for 8 months. That's when I started to see the contradiction everywhere. Walking through Acton, I'd bump into former colleagues from my retail job. Sarah from the electronics department had always talked about wanting to work in healthcare. Did you ever apply for nursing training? I asked her one day outside the supermarket. She had. Same story. Told there were no places due to funding constraints. Mark from menswear had applied for healthcare assistant roles and been told the same thing. Emma from the pharmacy section had wanted to train as a radiographer. No funding available. Meanwhile, my mum came home every shift talking about how desperately understaffed they were. We could use 20 more nurses on my ward alone, she'd say. The patients are suffering because we can't give them the time they need. So there were people who wanted to train. There were training facilities sitting empty with equipment still in boxes. There were wards crying out for staff. And everyone kept saying there was no money to connect these things together. I started to think differently about those phone calls. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins was telling me it couldn't find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. But the real question was never about money, was it? It was about whether the people existed. We did. Whether the skills could be taught. They could, in those empty rooms with their boxed equipment. Whether the materials were available, they were, gathering dust. The excuse wasn't a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. When a household says we cannot afford it, that might be true. They don't issue their own currency, but the government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching, still applying. But I understand now what I didn't understand at the start.
Every time someone told me there is no funding, they were making a political decision sound like an accounting problem. The Treasury that could have funded those training places chose not to. Not because the pounds didn't exist, they issue them. Not because the infrastructure wasn't there. I'd seen those empty rooms. Not because people like me weren't ready to learn, we were queuing up to apply. They chose to treat public investment like a household expense instead of what it actually is. The way a currency-issuing government deploys real resources to meet real needs. The resources existed. I existed. The decision not to connect us was political, not financial. And I know now that this isn't just my story. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. Someone just decided to keep it locked.
What Kavitha experienced has a name: impossible expectations. This technique demands a guarantee of zero waste or perfect outcomes before committing a single pound, a standard never applied to tax cuts or bank bailouts. It's like insisting that a new medicine must cure every patient with zero side effects before anyone can prescribe it, a standard that would halt all medical progress. The technique works by setting the bar impossibly high for public spending while waving through private sector failures as inevitable market forces. In Kavitha's case, Treasury officials demanded proof that every nursing training place would produce a nurse who stayed in the NHS for decades, never left the profession, never moved regions. No such guarantee could be given, so no investment was made. Meanwhile, the same Treasury approved billions in bank bailouts with no guarantee those banks wouldn't fail again, and tax cuts with no proof they'd boost economic growth. The NHS austerity objection, "The NHS is a bottomless pit, we cannot keep throwing money at it," sets exactly this impossible standard. No service is bottomless. NHS costs are measurable. The UK spends less per capita on health than France, Germany, or the Netherlands. The phrase treats any evidence of need as never sufficient. The UK government issues its own currency. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. In Kavitha's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Ealing Central and Acton ranks 195 out of 543 English constituencies for deprivation, according to the English Indices of Deprivation 2025 from MHCLG. The constituency has 997 registered charities on the Charity Commission register. Organisations in the area received £48 million in total grants, according to 360 Giving Grant Navy. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.